Hank Mobley on tenor sax with his own composition, Dig Dis. Yes, that's right, Dig Dis. It's from his 1960 album, Soul Station. Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, Art Blakely on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and sometimes I have to pinch myself to remember that I'm still alive. Because you can't imagine that people would deliberately create a world like this in which we all have to live chaotic, crazy, totally insane. But what are we talking about today? We're talking about the big topic of the moment. It's immigration. Will we ever be rational about immigration? The hot button issue of immigration is causing all kinds of calamity all over the world. But we should really try somehow to understand it for ourselves, not to prove anything to anybody. But how does this thing we call immigration, this thing that concerns the mass movement of people, from one place to another, from one country to another, how countries now are insisting on regulating the mass movement of people, for good or bad, I mean, that's your call. But it's something we should examine. What are the benefits? What are the downsides of immigration, especially in a constantly evolving, though rigidly controlled world? You know, I am an immigrant, as you know. Very proud of that. I am also a citizen of this country. And I'm also aware of how those things came to be. It's not a good story. It's not an uplifting story as to why, in my early teens, it was necessary to leave the country of my birth. I've shared with you that at age 7, this was the ritual in my family anyway, at age 7, you get two things as a birthday present, if you will. We didn't have birthday presents and all that stuff. That was not really part of our culture. But to mark the occasion, you got a bank book with $5 in it, and you got a passport. Now, this is at the age of about 7, 8. And that early, it was impressed upon your brain that you have to psychologically gear yourself up for leaving your country. You have to leave. If you are to achieve anything in life, if you are to have a future other than the future that the colonial powers had in mind for you, which is to take care of their children, you know, serve them in whichever way they need your service. And the highest you can hope for, the best you can hope for, is that maybe you would get a job as perhaps a teacher, a low-paying job. But it carries the advantage of respect of the community. You're not making a living. You're starving. But, you know, the idea was that this was what's supposed to be attractive about a teaching job. But my parents were quite astute. They understood what their nine children would have to confront. And survival depends on psychologically and emotionally preparing you for the eventuality that you got to get out of Dodge. There's no way you could survive in a society like that. Or it looks nice and people are polite. And, you know, it's you're living in a tropical country and you are enjoying the things that are normal to you are things that people yearn for, you know, an idyllic life. But it's not idyllic. And from the age of 7, in fact, I remember looking at my passport. I was looking at my little child face. And there was on the passport itself, you know, the pedigree information. And there was a line that says profession. And mine said child. I was a professional child. But this was the thinking of two very visionary people. They knew, intuitively they knew, that your horizons, if you are going to see the broad horizon, you wouldn't see it in the country. You'd have to go someplace else. Perhaps you might want to come back, but there is no way that what they have in mind for you to achieve in life, it could not be accomplished in the country under the circumstances in which we lived. And mind you, we weren't living under a brutal dictatorship. We didn't have martial law. There was no war. But then there was all of that. Because the system that controlled every aspect of our lives was implemented smoothly. You didn't even notice it. You did not even know that from the moment of your birth, you were consigned to second class, third class, fourth class, no class at all. Your life belonged to the queen. Isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? And there we are as little children singing, God save our gracious queen, when we had absolutely no incentive to sing that kind of an anthem. No incentive at all. But that's what life, colonial life, was all about. Colonial British life. So in that sense, immigration made sense as a strategy for long-term survival. As it turned out, we were not poor people. My father was a businessman. My mother owned her own businesses. And by comparison, it was a comfortable life. But when you're talking about where you want to be in life, what you want to do in life, and your ability to control your life, you had no say, really. That was shaped for you. given to you. And it was up to you to embrace the implicit instruction of where you were supposed to fit. See? So when we talk about immigration, we see that there are all kinds of reasons for the mass movements of people from one place to another. They have hopes and dreams and aspirations. And in almost every single instance, they have to move away from systems that thwart what they want to do. They have to move away from controls over their lives. That when you sit down and you think about it, are just totally unacceptable. You want to be in charge of your life. You want to be able to do what you want to do. You're not harming anybody. You're not infringing on anybody else's rights. You just want your little space. And if you can't get it here, maybe you get it over there. We have always been a world in which people have been moving from place to place. And in many cases, we see how disruptive that could be. Where you live becomes intolerable, not because you want it that way, but because life is organized by other people in such a way that your life becomes valueless and your options are few. If you are going to do the basic thing of protecting and affirming your own dignity. When you talk to most immigrants, they don't have dreams of taking over the world. They don't want to control people's lives to the nth degree. They simply want a better shot at things. But of course, this may sound as an oversimplification, so that's why we're going to talk about immigration today. What do you understand immigration to be? What is it? And what are, therefore, your concerns, if you have any, about this thing called immigration? Does it harm you? Does it threaten you in any way? Does it cause you to be concerned that the resources of the society in which we live are now going to be divvied up in order to accommodate people who have never contributed or have not so far contributed to the aggregate resources that we share as a nation? Are you somehow concerned about whether immigration is a right to be earned? And people have to pass different means tests in order to be determined as qualified to be immigrants. Does the fact that somebody not from your social background, not from your class background, actually is sharing resources that you think the priority should be that these resources were meant for people who were here? So kind of nativist approach. Are you bothered by the fact that in your eyes, way too many immigrants are not white? And that will do great injury to the future of America's racial purity. What is it that is troublesome to you about immigration? Or what do you think is troublesome to other people about immigration? Will we ever arrive at a point where we can be rational in discussing this issue of immigration? Now, I grew up, as I shared with you, I grew up in Trinidad. I didn't ask the Spanish to come and interfere with our hemispheric ways of doing things. I didn't ask Spain. I didn't ask France. I didn't ask the United States. I didn't ask Canada. I didn't ask any other country to come in and bother us. I didn't ask them to come and take over our land and our customs. I didn't ask them to squeeze us out of our own country. The British had their rule of Trinidad for, oh geez, hundreds of years. And by the time the country began to flex its own muscles of self-determination, they didn't come there to build hospitals and schools. They didn't come there to contribute to the aggregate progress of the country. They were very clear. The French didn't go into Vietnam with the idea of appreciating its culture and trying to figure out what they can do to help the people. Not at all. The United States didn't go to Puerto Rico to help the people of Puerto Rico. So when a country is robbed of its natural assets, its beauty, its resources, its people, you now begin to develop an entirely different way of seeing this thing called immigration. It's immigration with cannons and fighter jets and the insistence on dominating a whole other country, taking its resources, misusing and abusing its people. And they are left the worse for wear. It's almost always just the way it works. So let's talk about that. Let's start this conversation about immigration. What do you suspect lies right under the skin, even of progressives, about this thing called immigration? Do we understand what it is? Do we appreciate that there is a flip side to this coin? And that it cannot be ignored if we are going to have a truthful assessment of what immigration is, what it does to us, no matter where we are, but what it could do also. What could immigration be? So I'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. We'll take a little break and come back to your thoughts about whether you think we could be rational about immigration right after this. Listen. listening to PRN, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN. I'm Eutrice Leet. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air. What are your thoughts about immigration?
I think you pretty much alluded to what I was going to say, is that, you know, the United States being a superpower, one of the superpowers in the world, that it has been notorious for depleting other countries' natural resources, is now seeing the effect of that. In South America, between the United States and Canada and these other countries, they go into these countries, they exploit these countries for their natural resources, and then they close up shop, and those countries' economies pretty much go bankrupt. And you're seeing the effect of that. My wife, she's from Suriname, which is a stone away from Trinidad. They actually take Trinidad as a pit stop from Suriname to Miami. And in Suriname, Suriname has been raped of its bauxite, of its gold. And not only do they steal the natural resources, but the effects of mining those minerals leave long-lasting effects on the indigenous people of those countries. In Suriname is pretty much in the sector of the Amazon in the northeast portion of South America, where they depend heavily on their waterways for transportation and their food. The mining of gold has pretty much polluted all of their rivers with
cyanide, mercury.
Yeah, and so a lot of these indigenous populations are being affected because they depend on the fishing, the fish that they eat, and those fish are polluted. My in-laws live over there right now, and they are a victim of the separation policies of this country, where the Clintons actually implemented the 3 and 10 year bar on immigrants, and that separated immigrants, family members from the United States and from the other countries. So they pretty much are over there, and they have to wait. And now with the Trump administration, what they're doing, we don't even know if we're even going to be able to petition for them, because they want to end what they call chain migration.
But tell me what you feel about, I mean, what does immigration mean to you when you think about it? You've said, I mean, you have some personal, a very personal attachment and connection with immigration. But in the larger scheme of things, what is the impediment, you think, for people to really get a hold on what immigration is? When we talk about immigration, is it just about letting people in one country, you know, people leaving another country? What is it?
Well, immigration serves a major role in growing economies like the United States. If the country wants to remain stagnant, like many European countries they've pretty much started an immigration policy in Europe, but a lot of those countries have become stagnant because they had no immigration policy. Take Japan, for instance. They're just starting to let in people from China and things like that. But you have a lot of countries that don't have immigration policies, and when you look at their economies are either shrinking or stagnant. If you want to continue to grow an economy, you need immigration, because what happens is in a country, the population, you start creating a middle class and an upper class, and what happens is people get comfortable, they become more materialistic, they prefer to have money in their pocket than to have a big family. That's why you see in a lot of these countries people sometimes even opt not to have children. But what happens is, as they get older, there's no one to replace them in the workforce. So that's
where immigration comes into place. Tony, here's the thing. You mentioned about China and so forth. One of the things that fueled their resistance to immigration was what? What would you think was the guiding principle there?
Well, I would say it's racism.
Ah!
I would say it's racism. That's what it is. I mean, look at Russia. Yes. Russia, we have the World Cup going on in Russia right now, okay? I mean, a lot of people, we complain about the United States being a racist country, but a lot of these other countries, I mean, Russia, there was a politician over there that just advised all Russians not to have sex with foreigners during the World Cup, okay? And basically, they don't want to take care of any mixed-blooded babies after all the visitors, you know, go back to their home countries. So they don't want to be left with any Russian women pregnant with mixed babies, and they don't want to support that because they're racist. They, you know, a lot of these countries are just simply racist.
But this was an essential part of building national identity. Part of national identity is that you and others, you're one. You're from the same group, the same race, if you will. You have the same characteristics. You speak the same language. And these are the things that were very, very important in creating societies. Societies didn't want other people coming in there. Now, you know, my grandmother was among the last of her group in the Caribbean. She was a Carib. And through all kinds of admixtures in the Caribbean, as you know, everybody's everybody. I mean, all kinds of mixtures. But
my wife, she's a red Carib Indian.
And the powers that were doing the controls, they wanted racial purity. They could tolerate that elsewhere, but not at home. You hit the nail on the head today. Thank you so much, Tony, for getting us started. Maxelina from California, you're on the air. What does immigration mean to you, or what do you think it means to people?
You treat, it's Maxelina. Just one moment, I just have to say, you are, beg your pardon to detour one second, you are such an inspiration to me from your recovery back in the day. It's the first time I've really had the chance to speak with you, and I just want to say thank you. I told so many people. Anyway, on the topic of immigration, I'm an immigrant. And my mom is an immigrant. Excuse me. We are from Irish background. My mom left Ireland when she was 13 years old and came to the UK, met my father in the UK, who's British, but, well, he's actually British born, but his bloodline is Irish. So I left. I was born in an industrial slum in London, and I left there when I was 20, basically to escape a very abusive childhood from alcoholism, etc. And I went to Africa with a friend, and she was with me for, I was supposed to go for a month. She was with me for a year, and I stayed 8 years. And I made myself at home there, and I was very welcomed. There were very significant problems with racism and all that. But I overrode it by being integrated with the Indian people in Durban, South Africa. And then I came to the U.S. in 1983, and I entered legally into the U.S., and I really didn't have a place to go back, and back to England, so it took me 22 years to get the green card. I was harmed very badly by the vaccines when I had to go to immigration. I did get the green card, so I am legally here. The vaccines that they shot me up with were very numerous. And
you've had a harrowing experience. What I'm hoping that you could do for us today as we listen to you is, from your perspective, what do you think about the common understanding about immigration? What is correct about it and what is not correct about it? And how does it affect us all when we don't understand what immigration really is?
Well, it's very complex, you trace. Very, well, it varies wherever you're going, and there is some common ground. I noticed when I first came to California, incredible hatred of white people towards Mexican people. A lot of Mexican people in California. And I pointed it out to them. And over time, it is more integrated. Not really completely. More acceptance. There's, you know, and when I went back to England recently, my mother just died. I really miss the Mexican people. This is such a complex topic. Are we talking about people coming to America? I mean, it's just so complex. It's not. So many people are being forced to leave their place where they're supposed to go. I had to do it legally. It was incredibly hard, but I don't want to create the impression that there was no joy. There was enormous joy along the way. I relate to immigrants, I guess, mostly. Largely, I still don't feel, at times, I still feel more comfortable with a group of people from, you know, elsewhere. Although California, if you go to LA, you'll find it pretty international. I'm most comfortable in an international city, socially. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that because being born in London, I was surrounded by everyone. In fact, in my class in London, there were only two Irish girls, and everybody else was from Poland. Okay, in the 60s and 70s.
And, but you know, in a way, even in England, the Irish are considered immigrants.
Oh, yeah.
You're not considered English at all.
When I went back, Mom had dealt with 7 years of her dementia. She's only just left the planet, this Earth. And I was looking at the passports and stuff, and I don't remember all the details, but there were complications. She wasn't fully, like, after all her life there, wasn't really fully accepted, you know?
This comes out of the eternal state of war, actually, between Ireland and England, with England absolutely intent on conquering. But I mean, that in the old way, what conquering means, conquering the Irish, and the Irish determined not to let that happen. So immigration came out of this protracted period of war, which informed social ideas and habits, the English about the Irish being inferior. So it's a long, long road, and we still have no rational approach to it. It's, of course, not as brutal as it was before, but there's enough of the remnants of that long, protracted battle, which is indeed historical, to color the attitudes of the British about the Irish.
Yes.
In the Caribbean, on the other hand, the Irish were integrated into the Caribbean general population, we had no problems because we were in the same boat. Our mutual enemy, if you want to put it that way, were the British. And so alliances were formed. You had a lot of intermarriage going on. And you had the question resolved by the people in a different way about what immigration ought to be and what it ought to do. Thank you so much, Maxelina, for calling. I so enjoyed it. Thanks again. From Chicago, Henry, what is this thing called immigration and why is it such a troublesome problem?
How you doing, Eutrice?
Okay.
All right. Greetings to you and to all the listeners and callers.
Thank you.
Immigration has been, it's been going on ever since nations put up borders. And the thing with immigration is you have to look at it, and I think one of the earlier callers had mentioned it, that it's much deeper than just, you know, people from one country coming to another. And I know you've touched on this many times. But I think the problem, I would say particularly in this country, is immigration has been turned into more of a racial element here. And what I mean by this is I'm a little troubled with black people in this country who don't, I'm not saying all, but some black people who basically either don't care about what's going on with the with the children being separated from their family because of the fact that, you know, quote unquote, you know, black people have had, you know, children separate them for years. But the thing is that I think more of an element of that's them that it's happening to. It's not us. Well, we don't have a concept of, you know, we're all non-white people, including, you know, Mexicans. And the thing is that when you talk about Mexicans and people from the Latin American countries, they're very amalgamous in race. I mean, you have black Mexicans and black Latin Americans, and also, you know, you also have European-looking Mexicans and Latin Americans as well. And this confuses us because most of the time you have on the screens, you just see basically the light-skinned Mexicans or Latin Americans. You don't even see, you know, the Afro-Mexicans or the Afro-Latinos that's in detention. So I think the problem is that they're trying to make it not racial, but to me, I find it very racial. But, you know, the thing is that I see it as a confusion tactic with, with our concept of what immigration is. And coming from my experience, you know, my mother is a Filipino. So, you know, she's an immigrant as well. So, but the thing is that, you know, just like with the Latin American people, they're very, you know, their shades of color goes from very light to very dark. So, that's kind of like my two cents on immigration.
But why are we having so much trouble with it?
Well,
when history tells us people have been moving around all over the earth for millions of years, of course, we know that things have progressed and have become quite more organized in the sense that we have countries now, well-defined countries, and they have policies and they want to control who comes in and even who goes out. Why are we having all of this trouble? And what is the thing that we are so carefully avoiding in discussing immigration?
Well, I mean, I think maybe need to clarify a little bit more. But, you know, like I mentioned before, immigration, in particular in this country, has been turned into a racial issue. And so that's the reason why we're having so much issues, because white people in this country don't want non-white people to be filtering, you know, and infiltrating their country. So when you talk about, you know, immigration.
But when has it not been a racial issue, Henry? When has it not been a racial issue?
I wasn't alive when it wasn't a racial issue. I sure wasn't alive.
No, I mean, from your historical perspective, when has immigration not been racial in one way or the other?
In regards to the United States?
Any country. Pick any country.
Well, as far as the United States, I don't even looking down the history, I don't even think that it's not ever been a racial issue. I'm not too familiar with any of the other countries, but I would probably say, you know, maybe in Mexico, where they, like I said, they're very amalgamous people, where they have European, African, and Native American blood. So I guess Mexico at one point, it's never been a racial issue. So,
but this is the point. It's been going on for years. In with regard to the United States, you might have heard of pieces of legislation that were specifically targeting, like the Chinese Exclusion Act, mm-hmm. or federal legislation prohibiting, as recently, Trump prohibiting travel from certain countries into the United States. There's always been a fear of the outsider, of the other, and for good reason. What do you think that might be?
Fear of the outsider?
Fear of what?
Wait, say that again, Idris, I didn't hear you.
What do you think might be fueling all these different interpretations of immigration laws? What do you think might be fueling it? What might some of the elements be?
Well, probably for one, like I said, the, you know, just trying to keep the purity of I guess of the American identity, yeah, I guess in one. And to me, that kind of translates, like I said, into a more racial element where they want to keep, you know, they want to at least keep white Americans alive, because, you know, the birth rate among white Americans is going down. And then when you get more immigrants coming in and mingling with the people in society, you get a more browner and browner people. And you said this on your show before that, I think it's by 2040, America is going to be...
Yes, 2032.
Yeah, 2030 or 2040, America, white Americans are going to be the minority in numbers. So I think that has something to do with why they want to keep people from non-white countries out of here.
Could immigration, in your view, be a good thing?
In my view, yes. I think immigration is very, very beneficial.
How so?
Well, when you have people of different cultures coming in, you have different skill sets that come in, skill sets that nobody probably here, you know, may not know about. I mean, I know about a lot of people from Nigeria who are great builders and great architects who, you know, come over here. And from my understanding, I know a guy who has an architectural degree. He says he learns a lot from, you know, people from Nigeria because of the fact that they do things different over there. And he tries to integrate it with, you know, with some of his projects, you know, stuff like that, you know. So it's always a good thing. But as far as realistically here in this country, as long as especially number 45 is in the office, that's never gonna be be a reality in regards to accepting immigration in that type of essence.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for your views. We are just getting our toes into the water here with this discussion today. But it's good. It's good. Thank you so much, Henry, for your call. Leah from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Leah.
Oh, how are you, Eutrice?
I'm okay. How's about you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm so glad that you're still here with us and that the doctors were wrong. Yeah, I'd like to say that with regard to immigration, if I were to apply for citizenship in Ghana or Nigeria or any part of Africa, I think some of the things they would look at would be what kind of resources I would be bringing to the country, what kind of talents, what can I contribute, and look into my character. Here in the United States, I agree with everything that Henry said. In fact, he got a lot of my points. The white population in the United States is dropping. Now, I can remember, I don't remember whether it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, there was a situation in Bosnia or whatever. I don't remember which country. I know the Serbs were mentioned at that time. And the United States said, we're not taking in any refugees. And then they ended up taking about 30,000 white refugees into the country. And they got vouchers for furnished apartments and food and whatever, and they've assimilated into the population, and we haven't heard anything yet. Again, now I've told all of my friends that if you watch from any year ending in a 2006, 2016, leading up to the year ending in a zero, which is census time, there is always something that happens to boost the white population. Now, in this particular instance, we don't have any pending policies toward the refugees or so-called refugees coming into the country that are white. However, 45 has mentioned that he doesn't want anybody from any of these S-hole countries, referring to non-whites. So we're leading up to the census. We're also leading up to the 2020 elections. And if enough non-white people come into the country, that could shift the balance of power. And then there's always the danger, in quotes, of intermarriage and the dilution of the white race. Those are my thoughts of immigration in the United States.
But just the same, what do you think is the primordial fear here? What is the hesitancy? The United States doesn't have a problem thinking that Americans should be allowed to emigrate wherever they want to. But what is it about immigration into the United States that is posing such a problem?
I think fear of annihilation, racial annihilation, and the loss of power. You know, sort of caught me off guard there. I can't really wrap my head around that. Everything in this country is based on race. Everything is based on race from the very beginning. And, you know, people who want to leave, fine, but they'll find a way to replace them or deny others to keep the balance of power.
Is there a good thing? I asked Henry the same question. Is there a good thing that we should be appreciate about immigration?
Sure. I mean, we're all citizens of the world, and we all, you know, everybody has a gift. And there are a lot of people in Cuba. They have some of the best medical doctors, I hear, in the world. Why not allow Cubans to come here if they want to? You know, I mean, everybody has something that they can contribute, and they talk about diversity, but they don't really believe in it because they believe that only white people reign supreme and can do everything when, you know, Africans gave the world everything. including...
Is it your sense that somehow immigration is more of a factor today, that there's so much more attention to it than there was, let's say, in previous administrations? Do you get a sense that it's it has increased, or was it always this way?
I think it was always this way. However, there are more situations in other countries where, you know, there's desperation because of whatever things, poverty, famine, danger, and there are more people applying to come. I heard, I think it might have been on your program or it was on Gary's program today, where he had sound bites from Obama and from Clinton, who were voicing the very same opinions or policies as Trump. And nobody jumped all over them for it, but, you know, Trump is a very brash person, and I think he's, you know, brought a lot more attention to it. But I think it's been going on all along.
I think so, too. Thanks, Aaliyah, for your call.
You're welcome.
Well, we have just begun. We just put our pinky toe in this massive lake called immigration. And we will continue to talk about immigration because there are so many aspects to it that we just don't consider when we talk about immigration, and therefore we don't consider the consequences and the impact of it. I will give you an idea soon enough. I have to put it together in a more concise way. What immigration has come to mean in our time. There was a time when the powers that be liked the idea that the people should be moved around and the money stays put. Now they've shifted it. Now they want to move the money around, but they want the people to stay put. This is now after centuries of economic models that added with racial views, added with views on class, added to the notion of white supremacy, was a very potent concoction that then became policy. We have such respect for it, calling it policy. It's not policy. It is an organized way for the powers that be to regulate life. Because, in fact, they are terrified of the potential consequences if people were left to their own devices. The people far smarter, far more capable than governments ever have been. So they insert themselves in this idea of how to regulate societies, not only within their borders, but outside of their borders. And now with a rapid development of global commerce, where money is moving like crazy all over the world, what do you do with the people that you don't need? And certainly, what do you do to prevent even more people from coming in? Times have changed. In the old days of slavery, more millions and millions and millions of people were moved from Africa and other parts to places all over the world to create wealth for the motherland, for the mother country, for the conquerors. Then we have technology coming in, and you don't need to carry people all over the place anymore. You don't need to be in the business of having to take responsibility for your actions and capturing them And then now you have to, there's some expectation of care. You have to take care of your prizes, right? So now it's the money that moves, and they want the people to stay just where they are. That's a very simple formula for modern day immigration. Money moves, people should stay put. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crow, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening and contributing today. Bye-bye.